It don't matter what I try, I just can't win and I don't know why. There's a fork in every road, I pick the wrong one and then I go. American loser, yes I am. Disenfranchised from everything. Well, I fall up and I fall down. An American loser the day I was born.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of American Loser. In keeping with this is the last episode for the month of March, I believe, guys. And we got South Beach Larry still here with us. How you doing today, Dad?
We're doing fine. We're doing fine. Not still bad. Hanging in.
Behind the ones and twos, of course, the big kahuna.
What's going on?
Our honorary Irishman for the month of March, correct? That's, I know you're a little Irish, too, right?
Yeah,
everybody's
I do have a little
Irish
bit
in
of
the month of March.
Everyone, when I say that, they look at me and go, are you okay?
Well, we have another guest here with us, too, at a shared universe studio in Eatontown, New Jersey, where Mike and Ming do take great care of us. Both Mike and Ming have agreed to be on the show when South Beach Larry goes back down to Florida for the month of April. So all
sounds
your
like
bosses.
You're getting a little anxious there.
What have they got against South Beach Larry?
All of your bosses in one room at the same time, Kahuna. How's that make you feel? All right?
It was at that moment Big Kahuna shit himself.
That's right. Well, our guest today is no pressure on that one, man. He's a good buddy of mine. I'm happy to reconnect with him here. And he's also, as my father said earlier, it's nice to have because there's a lot of people that are Irish and they think that being Irish means you put on a plastic green derby on St. Patrick's Day. Then you get shit-faced drunk and either start a fight or vomit on your own clothes. And our friend today, comedian Dennis Daly, all right, I call you comedian because that's how I know you.
Thank
as a comedian.
Yeah.
Also a very talented musician, but welcome to the show, brother. Thanks for doing it.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I would define myself more of the Irish experience as, having incredible amounts of guilt about the thing that I did when I was 10 years old that I, you know.
Are the Irish known for guilt now? Growing up in my house, Dennis, there's Irish guilt, but there is something more powerful. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. Armenian guilt.
Oh.
Yeah, that is – I'm adopted. So my Armenian mother that adopted me has taught us that Armenian guilt trumps – if you take Jewish guilt and Irish guilt and combine both of them – still a couple degrees below Armenian guilt. So, I mean, I feel bad about things I have no control over still to this day. I confess to the JFK assassination once. But I'm happy to have you here, dude. You were one of the because we started out doing open mics together in Starlight Pizza in West Orange, New Jersey, right?
Oh, yeah.
Remember those days?
Big Rich.
Who's been on the show before, man? One of my close buddies here. But you were one of the guys that, I said this to you earlier, should not have stopped doing comedy. And I said that because you're a funny guy. You always made me laugh. I enjoyed your stuff, man. And then I hope you get back into it like you were saying. But there's so many people out there that should do the opposite of what Dennis did.
This is a public service announcement.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's not going good for you guys,
right.
You're allowed to put a couple of years in while you try to figure it out. But after 8 years, it's sad. Okay? You guys know who I'm talking to. But when I was working at Culligan doing installing water softeners, the owners kept telling me, no, man, it's going great. You're doing a great job. And I was like, then why does every customer scream at me and kick me out of their house? And then the owners are like, no, you're doing great, man. You're going to get it with time. Don't worry. And I was like, I'm tired of getting screamed at all the time and it not going well. So I quit water softening. All right. And a lot of you need to quit comedy. That's what I'm trying to tell you. But
it doesn't get better.
No, it does not get better. You got to have the foundation, man. But no, super funny dude, man. I'm happy to bring you back in here. Now, another passion that we both share. We both like American history as well.
Absolutely.
So I know you're a more learned man than most. So I'm stoked to have you on the show here. We picked a specific topic.
Learned in jazz saxophone.
Yeah, this episode is about jazz music.
Oh, perfect, perfect.
No, it could be though, man. That would be another interesting American loser. But last week we covered a topic near and dear to my father's heart, Thomas Francis Maher, right?
Correct.
And we laid
hero,
a lot of
go ahead. Hero of the American Civil War and points before and after.
He sure was. And what was interesting, too, is you laid a lot of really good groundwork. So I'm not going to say this is a companion piece, okay, because it's not. But if you want to go more in depth some of the earlier shit for why England and Ireland really don't like each other, please check out the Thomas Francis Maher episode, which was our St. Patrick's Day edition. Now, today we're going to talk about something that Maher's story is involved with, all right? But pretty interesting thing here. Kahuna, what would you do if I told you? Because I saw this very funny meme one time trying to explain.
Are you trying to get at me with memes? Okay, I'm in.
I think you'll like them. I'm trying to speak your millennial language.
Yeah, I can tell. You're trying.
But here's
old man of 31 talking to a 21-year-old.
Exactly. It's 10 years difference. He goes, you grew up with black presidents. We never had them when I was a kid.
But, all right, old man, what is it?
Well, there's a very funny meme, and it's a picture of Zach Galifianakis from the movie The Hangover, and he's got all those math equations and geometry symbols in front of him. And the meme that I saw that made me laugh, it was trying to describe World War One, and it said, when the Australians have to invade Turkey because Franz Ferdinand was shot by the Serbs, so Austria goes to war and brings Germany into France, right? Or something to that degree, where just what a
and
colossal
you see that picture.
Mind fuck. Yeah, so now using that same kind of a what the fuck moment, we're going to talk about something here today. What would you do, Kahuna, if I told you? We do have a nice 30 for 30 vibe going here. What would you do
if I
– If anyone's got the voice for it here, it's definitely you, dude.
Oh, Dennis has a good voice for sure.
Thank you.
Now, this particular thing we're going to talk about today is wild. What would you do, Kahuna, if I told you that after the Civil War, members of the Union Army of Irish descent – under Irish leadership.
Well, actually, both armies. I'm just going to throw it in there. It wasn't just the Union Army. It was also the Confederates. So guys that were shooting at one another now decide they're going to come together and
– well, talk about free agency, right?
That's right. That's right.
Now, there's a concept. So what if I told you that Irish Americans invaded Canada to hold Canada hostage and ransom so that the British would release Ireland –
Yeah. What?
Sounds like a plan, right?
Yeah. Sounds – what?
Kahuna's patented puppy head turn was on full display there.
So was it, what? No.
Well, here's what we're going to talk about.
Oh,
we're
it's
talk
patented?
About...
I didn't even know.
Right. You better register
There's
that.
A lock on that.
Going to talk about something today known as the Fenian Raids, all right, fellas? So without further ado, this week's American Losers are the boys involved with what is known as the Fenian Raids. Now, the stereotype of the Irish is a – hard-drinking island of stubborn, hot-tempered writers and fighters, okay?
And but then, how true is that?
Almost exclusively.
That's right. There's always some truth in every stereotype, though, right?
Now, my theory is anybody who is worth a damn in Ireland came to America. So we don't have any listeners in Ireland. I'm really bummed out by
their
that.
Their greatest export
after
is their
this,
people.
You know, yeah. That's a but no, they're very funny to me because they're well-read people too, where it's like they'd get into a fist fight because you quoted Hawthorne out of context. You know? But some of the stereotypes are true. Other parts of this are embellished a little bit. But that little island off the coast of Britain has certainly bore its share of big personalities. We're going to get into a couple of them today here. In America, we have – now, Dennis, you're a musician here. So who is your favorite artist off the top?
Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
Would you consider Stevie Wonder to be the voice of a generation to a degree? I mean, he was a pretty interesting guy.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I mean, he's just like that overarching, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, just always relevant, always pushing.
Total badass.
Yeah, absolutely. That's yeah.
Now, when you talk about the voice of a generation, my father grew up, I would say Bob Dylan would be a voice of a generation for you guys.
Robert Zimmerman. Bob Dylan.
And then, you know, I know for me, they always said that Kurt Cobain was the voice of a generation for a time frame I feel most connected to.
And my generation's got Lil Peep.
It's well, you had Lil Peep. That silly boy's dead, isn't he?
Yeah, Lil Peep is gone.
Yeah, very hey, sorry. Russ. He didn't even make it to Easter.
Oh, my God. Put him in the microwave. <baby. That's
right. laughs> Who just said put him in the microwave?
Well played, sir. In America, we have the voice of a generation. In Ireland, they have the uprising of a generation because it's almost like everybody there's always a rebellion to be had here. So it's a, oh, my dad was in this rebellion. Oh, that's cool. Maybe I was thinking about starting a rebellion. Why don't you come over to my garage and we'll do a rebellion in this band and figure it all out as we go.
Yeah. And your grandfather had his and your great-grandfather had his.
Well, it was kind of their way of doing things over there. Now, they got this long-stemming problem with England. because England had the Union Act, which kind of forced the two of them to go hand in hand around 1800. LP, just very briefly, we talked about it in detail.
Like the last time when we were going on and on.
But it's too deep of a topic, and your attention to detail is what keeps the show honest. So.
I've got 6 pages of notes on it.
It's handwritten notes too, mind you.
The Act of Union was legislation that was enforced on the Irish that basically you could have your own Irish parliament, but it was really just a puppet situation where London or England is still calling the shots, that nothing was going to happen within Ireland without London's giving it the okay.
Mm-hmm. So I like to compare the relationship a little bit to New York and New Jersey, where it's there's a little bit of a body of water between the two of us. And then imagine if New York was trying to tell New Jersey how to do their business.
It's starving us.
Yeah, and right. starving right. us right. and telling us we have to act more like New Yorkers. So
we'd riot if they told us we're responsible for Staten Island now.
Well, I have a joke I was trying on stage where it was like, New York acts like it's better than everybody else, and then New Jersey's sitting there like, hey, New York, you ain't so great. You're not better than us, right? You know, you're walking around here like you own the place, and then Pennsylvania goes to New Jersey. Yeah, right, man, New York ain't so great. And then Jersey looks at Pennsylvania and goes, hey, shut the fuck up. I'm talking to New York over here. But one of the most popular rebellions in Ireland was known as the Fenian Brotherhood, and that's who this comes from here. One of my tattoos is actually loosely inspired by something that these guys were involved with, which if you want to know how to get in trouble in U.S. Navy boot camp, when they ask you what your tattoo means, say the Republic of Ireland, and they say, back of the line. You want to try that one again? It's for my Irish heritage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Don't accidentally say you're involved in Ireland's version of ISIS.
right. There you go.
But so the Fenians are an Irish independence organization created in 1848 by a guy by the name of John O'Mahony. Dennis, can you think of a more stereotypical name?
Well, I mean, for maybe this is your New Jersey connection, but my mother's maiden name is Mahoney.
Jesus Christ.
So, I mean, it is.
So she dropped the O at Ellis Island? Or yeah.
Okay. Forever gone. That is another thing that joins the Irish and the Italians is the brutal, the destruction of last names coming through. Like, what'd you say your name was? O'Mahony? All right, Mahoney, whatever. It's like, oh, my name is Mahoney. That might be the thing too. But Corleone, you know, all that other shit. So O'Mahony is born in Limerick, Ireland in 1816, a full 100 years before the eventual Easter Uprising in 1916, which we'll cover towards the end here a little bit. His father and his uncle had fought in the Irish Uprising of 1798, which was heavily influenced by the American and French revolutions, which if you're grading revolutions at home, the American Revolution is A+, quality work, okay? And the French Revolution – I'm going to go ahead and call that a D- if there is one. Yeah, you've pulled off your goal, but when your revolution ends in a reign of terror,
right, yeah.
I think you did a couple things
and
wrong.
And all the guys who started it end up
took
with their heads cut
off.
Took a
couple of missteps.
Yeah. Let's ask Robespierre what we should do. Oh, yeah, we took his head off. But LP, what do you know about that uprising of 1798 that O'Mahony's father and uncle were involved with?
Well, that was a major uprising. I mean, if you do a quick Wikipedia search for a list of the Irish uprisings through the years.
Of which there's many.
Well, I mean, Wikipedia lists 25 with just a quick search, and that's from going back from 1534 all the way up to present day. Because there are those that feel that we're still in revolt against the British Crown because not all of Ireland is still part of the Republic. But we'll cover that a little bit later on. But in 1798, it was a major uprising, and there was the promise by the French to send in aid, send in guns and actual troops that, you know, they fooled us. They never showed up, and the revolt failed miserably. And once again, we've got another generation of martyrs for the Irish that just continued on and on and on. That they always had difficulty with having the revolt start throughout the entire island at the same time. It was always sporadic bits and pieces from here and there and everywhere that they never could get a unified front, if you will.
Well, now, the other part that's interesting, too, is that there is a line in that David Kincaid song called The Irish Volunteer, which is just, a modern take on the old marching song for the good old 69th,
right.
Which was the Irish Brigade, if you've listened to the previous episode. If not, it was a brigade of almost exclusively Irish Americans. And they praised Thomas Francis Maher, who was the head of the brigade, if you will. But one of the early lines in the song is, my father fought in 98 for liberty so dear, and he fell upon old Vinegar Hill like an Irish volunteer. So that's the 1798 uprising they're talking about, and Vinegar Hill being one of the seminal battles that it did not go good for the boys in Ireland.
Right. Is that Cromwell at that point? Or
no, I don't believe that was Cromwell. I think that was
He was beforehand, yeah. That Orange Order thing is going to come into play here too. So the whole Cromwell Protestant versus Catholics thing. That's in America, we play cowboys versus Indians. In Ireland, they play Protestants versus Catholics. So, now, he and his father had fought in the uprising of 1798, which, like we were talking about, that uprising failed but had a lasting effect on this Irish independence movement. They almost get a little bit better at it every time. You know what I mean? It's like going to open mics. You think you have a joke. You have a premise you want to work out. And, you know, okay, well, I bombed tonight, but I'm not going to bomb tomorrow. Right. It's bad because now I know this.
And then you see, well, I saw France do this bit, and I think that I can do it a little bit better.
Right. I'll just do a slight different version.
Yeah.
And
yeah, what if instead of redneck, I did it all about Italian jokes? You know what I mean? You might be Italian if But now, an interesting guy here, this Mr. O'Mahony, as we're going to call him. He's raised in a house that, quote, spoke a little treason. What does that mean, LP?
Treason is going against the king or anything, any of the government forces, if you will. So if we're talking treason, that's a hangable offense.
That's how good we have it here in America, is that Dennis and I could go to a pizza place in West Orange and just tell dick jokes that was our hobby. The hobby back in Ireland was insurrection.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah.
You said erection at the end of that.
Good point. Solid point. We do need more sponsors for this show. Blue Chew, if you're listening, we're willing to sponsor you on this show. But O'Mahony grew up in a household that was already speaking a little treason. His family's involved in these earlier uprisings. Now, he gets himself a little decent inheritance and enrolls himself at the only university in Ireland. You know the name of that one, Dennis?
That's Trinity.
Hell yeah. Trinity, oddly considered to be an anti-Catholic institute to the point of where Thomas Francis Maher's family would not allow him to attend the university. So he was schooled outside of the area.
Yeah, and when the government is telling you what can be taught and what can't be taught, and anything that smacks of Irish or Irish heritage or history is disallowed by law, and then that has an overriding theme, if you will, within the educational schools of thought, that if you start teaching Irish history, you're going to be shut down completely.
Well, they don't want any of that involved here. Now, what's cool about O'Mahony is that he digs right into a lot of the old Irish traditions. And one of the things that he becomes obsessed with is the legendary Irish folktale of Finn McCool. Now, during my time down in Jacksonville, there was a bar down at the beaches called Finn McCool's, and I was a patron of that establishment quite a bit here.
You spurred the economy in your own way.
Yeah, I supported local business.
Okay. Right, there you go.
But you know anything about Finn McCool, Dennis?
I don't, actually.
All right.
I know that it's like a legend, right? It's
completely a legend here, but what's fun about him is that because a lot of people don't realize this, but Irish legends, a lot of them turn into American folklore. So the immortal Washington Irving, story of the tale of Sleepy Hollow. So the Headless Horseman.
I thought you were talking about Dr. J for a second.
Julius Irving. Well, what winds up happening is that with the Headless Horseman, that is based off of something known as the Doulahan in Ireland, which is a horse rider with no head who comes to you to take your soul across the river, kind of a thing.
Mm.
So a lot of interesting stuff there. The Irish, we also talked about this earlier. When you hear fairy in American context, we always think it's something cute and pleasant. The fairies over in Ireland are essentially demons. So it's
right. The tooth fairy and the fairies in Ireland were – the fairies in Ireland are stealing your babies and, deeming you to internal suffering.
Blighting your potatoes.
Right.
Which so is, they're just metal.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a – yeah. Right. It's a, you want to call me a fairy? But
I'll show you Ferry.
Well, Finn McCool is also part of this this Irish folklore, if you will. Now, some people say that he is a legendary warrior who helped defeat the Vikings, and then other people, depending on who you talk to, portray him as this magical, benevolent giant who literally created the Giant's Causeway. Mm. All right, over and then the fun thing too is that there's two islands off the coast of Ireland. There's the Isle of Man, which is said to have been a clump of dirt that Finn McCool threw that came off a rock he was skipping, all right? And then the other rock that landed was a little island called Racall, okay? Now, was it the Chieftains or the Clancy brothers dead?
I think it was – it wasn't either, neither one of those. I'm trying to remember who
it was. No, the Wolftones, maybe.
Rock on, Racall. I think it might have been the Wolftones.
Well, there's a very funny song, Dennis, called Rock on, Racall. And then the chorus is, Rock on, Racall, you never fall from Britain's greedy hands. You meet the same resistance that you did in many lands. And then this is their ode to the British, if you will, and the British try to take control of the island of Racall once they realized there was natural gas on it. It said, may the seagulls rise and pluck your eyes, and the water crush your shell, and the natural gas should burn your ass and blow you all to hell.
Yeah, Racall is just a little spit of an island in between England and Ireland. And folklore has it that Finn McCool threw this stone and it became the island of Racall. Now, nobody really gave a shit about Racall for, you know, hundreds of years. It was just a nothing. It was the seagulls, you know, that was the only thing that was living out there. But then all of a sudden they find natural gas on Racall, and now all of a sudden the British are saying, well, you know, that's really ours. And Ireland is saying, oh, wait a minute here. You know, our long history and our long heritage says that that's an Irish on an island. But, you know, it's funny.
Yeah, you can't want Ireland, Nevada money back now that we have you. Vegas.
Ireland was tired of giving up its lunch money.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bullying that goes on over here, man. But old Finn McCool is said to remain asleep in a cave, and he'll someday be awoken in Ireland's greatest hour of need. So when U2 breaks up, Finn McCool will be summoned.
Man, this whole story is just so punk rock. Like that song that you
there. That's a punk rock is definitely influenced heavily by Irish folk music because we grew up listening to a lot of it, mm-hmm. man. And it's there. You know, you want to talk about the mixing of rock and roll and all that other stuff. You get different drum beats and stuff like that. Kind of the Irish, the rabble rousing, if you will. I mean, it's all in there, man. And O'Mahony's a bit of a rock star too himself. He
excellent transition, 5 points.
I'm good at this one, man. It's O'Mahony would study and later teach Gaelic, Hebrew, Sanskrit, and Latin over at Trinity College. I speak English. That's all I do. All right. That's pretty much it.
He learned Sanskrit?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Gaelic at the time, or Irish, was forbidden by English law. So, I mean, he's doing mm-hmm. this pretty much on the
forbidden
on the
by
side.
Law. So, forbidden wait, what would law. Happen if someone just spoke it? They would be put in jail or?
Depending on where you live. Now, obviously, if you're on the western side of Ireland, the more remote part of Ireland, I mean, the people are speaking Gaelic as their native tongue. That, you know, you're going to arrest the whole town? Well, no. I mean, depending on where you – but if you're in Dublin –
I'm sorry I caught up on that. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard where it's like
– Welcome to the British laws that were imposed upon the Irish that –
you speak a language, you're being put to right. death. You're being put to death.
Well, they made it illegal to be Irish, yeah. which it's
a very popular song on St. Patrick's Day in this country is the Wearing of the Green. Everybody knows that tune, the Wearing of the Green. But the words to that, you know, for the hanging men and women for the Wearing of the Green, to wear green clothing was forbidden by British law, and it could be punishable by death, depending on how the local magistrate felt about that. So,
right.
If the local magistrate was just sick of seeing your face,
right, right. If he's got a reason to hate you to begin with, hey, wait a minute, you're wearing green today, you're out, you know. So, yeah, it was some crazy
times. It wasn't very easy.
It was fun times.
Yeah, yeah. Not an easy life for them over here.
My favorite one of those penal laws was you can't have a horse worth over 5 pounds.
5 pounds, yeah. Right.
It's like you can have a horse, right. But it can't be a nice horse.
Right, right, right.
Surrender that nice horse. Right. That is our horse.
Right.
Yeah, so essentially if you put it in a modern context, you're allowed to have a car. You just can't have a car worth more than $30,000.
So. Oh, so I am suffering from the penal laws
right now. Yeah, penal law is still enacted here, especially among comedians and musicians.
You can have a cop car. You can have a retired cop car, but you can't have it drive as fast as a normal cop car.
Well, much like every other great Irishman, O'Mahony proved that he's a great scholar but leaves Trinity without a degree. That's my cop-out for why I never finished at Brookdale.
I'm out of here.
He began attending speeches at – again, this is that part where it's a companion piece. You don't have to hear the earlier episode here, but the stories are going to intertwine a little bit. He begins attending speeches down at Conciliation Hall in Dublin, where he joined up with the promising Daniel O'Connell's moves to end the Union Act of 1800, which had forced Ireland to submit to England. He would soon become frustrated with the lack of progress made by O'Connell and quickly aligns himself with the most notable speaker at Conciliation Hall. I mean, you start out doing comedy, man. You're blown away by a headliner, right? Mm. You're sitting there. But I imagine the same way with music, is that when you see somebody who's just got it going on, you're like, that's a great band. I want to be a part of that band, man. Well, there was nobody more famous at Conciliation Hall than Thomas Francis Maher. I mean, he was filling seats, all right? Now, he's got this little confederation here going on that he's going to start putting together with Maher and O'Mahony join up to form the Young Ireland Movement, which leads to yet another failed rebellion.
Again, there was a schism within that whole movement to repeal the Act of Union.
Between O'Connell and right. and Maher, right. yeah.
And there's a whole, you know, a lot of people are getting tired, and people are being paid or bought out to change their attitudes towards this thing, you know, with the promise of jobs and everything else. So O'Mahony and Maher are deciding that they need something a little more decisive here, and they start to form the Young Islanders. The Young Irelanders. Yeah, that's easy.
It's not a great name, right? Yeah. No, it's not a great name. Now, just so you know, with the uprisings and everything, Kahuna, there's kind of a Jets-Patriots vibe going on here that they do a little better every now and then. There's an occasional glimmer of hope, a Rex Ryan,
right.
you know.
They score a touchdown.
But then it'll end in a butt fumble, all right? That's what winds up happening here. The Young Islanders Rebellion of 1848, which we covered in the earlier episode. Do you remember the other name for it, Dennis?
Oh, the Young Irelanders?
Yeah, the Famine Rebellion.
Yeah, right, because they were too hungry to fight.
Right. Yeah, that's not good. Yeah, no wonder the Patriots are winning. We're not letting the Jets eat.
Yeah.
But
because at this point in time, the famine has been going on for a couple of years. And in 48, we already went through 3 years of famine, with the worst year being in 1847, which was come to be known as Black 47. Mm-hmm. That was the
another
worst
great band
of the year. Right, another, another great Irish band, but... you know, it's not strange that they took their name from Irish history with Black 47. But
oh, absolutely. Yeah,
if you're worrying about, you know, something to eat, you're not going to be too much involved with military activities when you're worrying about where your next meal is coming from.
Well, on the I can't remember which one it is that I have. I believe I have the Black 47. It might be the greatest hits that I have on my iPod. But it's what's cool about them is that one of the songs is "Living in America," which is not their song by any means, but it is their. They're definitely making sure people are aware of the connection between New York and you know, the old sod, if you will. But Maher and O'Mahony would then go on to form that failed rebellion here, like we talked about in 1848, of the Young Irelanders. See, now you got me fucking it up.
That was really hard.
Well, don't worry, because we don't have to know their name anymore because they went down in flames.
Right.
So. Now, Maher sees himself exiled to Tasmania. O'Mahony needs to get out of Ireland as well and settles over in Paris. Now that he's no longer in Ireland, he doesn't have that nice money coming in from his inheritance that he, you know, used to have. So he really risked it all, man. I got to give him credit for that one here. Winds up over in Paris. What do you think about Paris, Dennis, for a young, frustrated Irish writer? Is that a good place or a bad place to be?
I imagine it's a bad place, but, you know, I don't know. I can't imagine anywhere... I think the worst place for an Irish person would be like the Tasmania, probably, because you're going to burn.
Yeah, it's just mean at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. You were transported to Tasmania. Nobody's going to Tasmania or Van Diemen's Island, as it was known then, because they wanted to. They're not visitors. They're not tourists. You were sent there because you're a convict and you were transported there. You were forced to go there.
Yeah, it's like when my Armenian mother told her to blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid she was taking us to Florida. And we said, oh, my God, what did we do wrong? I'm so sorry. please, we'll be better. We'll stop running in the house.
You went to live there, dude.
Sit on the beach. Burn.
Oh, man. Well, it got
you should have known that was a bad idea, KP.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to go. I got the 2 times I've been to Florida, it was because my mother made me go, which I have a lot of good memories down there. Let's be honest. And the other time was because Uncle Sam told me that's where I was going. And I took it because the original orders were for Guam. And I was saying, okay.
Okay.
All right.
Jacksonville's better than Guam.
Yeah. Guam, by the way, as I understand it, I've never been. My cousin Mike was stationed out there. And I had a couple other friends who told me it's essentially no one is above 5 feet tall. And the entire island is a military base and strip clubs.
Huh.
So if you're looking for culture, you ain't going to find it.
Stripes,
but now what's interesting here is that Maher's over in Tasmania. O'Mahony's in Paris. He continues to write about Irish independence nonstop. And in 1854, O'Mahony would join a few of his young Ireland brothers in New York City. So let's take the show on the road, baby. All right. O'Mahony would later lose his mind, literally lose his mind. He was insane. He was committed to a psychiatric facility, which the more we dig into this, the more you realize that happened a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay. Nowadays, we just call it rehab. But it was fun to check this out, though, because he wrote this monumental task of republishing the history of Ireland told from these older texts, all those outlawed books we were talking about. So, Kahuna, you watch Game of Thrones, right?
Just started, actually.
Okay. Well, now I can't say the rest of this thing, obviously. So,
but you know what? No, it's okay. I know most of the spoilers, so go for it.
No, don't worry about it. I don't want to ruin any of it for you. But essentially, it's he's going through the old legends that everyone's saying, like, oh, you don't have to work, you know, you don't waste your time with that. And he's finding all this really cool culture and history. So he wants to take the, quote, Protestant washing from the English that took away huge chunks of the Irish culture, and he wants to put that back out there into the open. So writes this incredible book, doesn't make a fucking penny off of it, all right, called The History of Ireland, and he winds up being put into a mental institution. LP, what are you thinking?
No, I'm just thinking that, you know, it goes back to that old adage that the history books are written by the winners. So, I mean, if the English are constantly beating the shit out of the Irish and winning all these battles and crushing all these rebellions, and now they're outlawing anything that smacks of Irish history, and they're telling the Irish what their history is from the English viewpoint, kind of a thing, that it's an eye-opener for O'Mahony, that when he starts digging below the surface and finding these old texts and these old histories and oral legends and everything else, that there's a whole different culture that he wasn't even aware of, that nobody else was either, because it was forbidden to be to be taught. So,
well, that's another thing too, because you see a lot of it in black culture as well, that when you go through black history, a lot of people's version of black history starts with slavery in America. And you're like, well, there's a whole continent full of culture over there.
Right.
You guys should, you know, check some of that shit out, man. Some really cool stuff over there. But we're now in New York, and our boy O'Mahony gets released from the mental institution because he's all better, which means he probably sobered up for 96 hours and took a ride. But
I think that's a stereotypical attitude you're taking. Yeah.
Oh, man. No, so he goes ahead. He gets himself out over here. And I guess he must have been in some sort of a good intellectual form, because after his release, he's able to earn a colonelship in – you want to take one wild guess what brigade he became associated with, Dennis?
I think probably the 69th.
The New York 69th, the Irish Brigade. But now at the same time, he's also one of the presidents of the Fenian Brotherhood. Now, this is a organization that he's created, and literally they call themselves the Fenians, which is known as the band of warriors that would travel around with Finn McCool. So it's all going right back to that Finn McCool legend, the hidden history of Ireland. There's like a mythical kind of a thing here, which what's that going to do? That's going to draw in people.
Definitely.
Very good recruiting move here. So they go ahead and they've got these people who are flooding the ranks of the Fenian Brotherhood. O'Mahony realizes now that he has to give his full attention to managing this Fenian Brotherhood, resigns his command in the good old 69th. So he's now got crazy fundraising efforts coming. Like, what do you guys do when you want to go on tour with your band, Dennis? What do you guys do to try to make shit happen?
We book an anchor date somewhere.
What's an anchor date mean for people?
Oh, anchor date is like a one high paying gig, and then you surround yourself with other dates on the road that may not be as successful, but you know that you have that like $5,000 guarantee to like pay for you to continue to travel.
Right. So you got, okay, the anchor date, and then you work around it. So like, oh, cool, guys, the Fenian Brotherhood, we need to raise money because we're trying to pull off this one crazy big goal, and we'll do a couple other weird things on our way to make sure.
That's right.
So they've got some interesting goals here, my friend, let me tell you. O'Mahony gives his full attention to the Fenian Brotherhood, and as we said, he named these guys – these are Finn McCool's boys, all right? The move becomes wildly popular. He's using the folklore to appeal to the Irish independence movement. Now, freedom to Ireland was such a newsworthy story, all right, and such a popular opinion in the United States because – around this time frame, the two biggest immigrant blocks in America are German and Irish. That moving forward a couple of years here to World War I, that's why it was such a weird thing for the United States to decide whether or not we wanted to get involved in World War I, because the two biggest immigrant populations were – there was more German print newspapers than there were English print newspapers in America at the time, which is fascinating because now if you decide you're going to fight with Britain, you're going to piss off all the Irish – that are all going to get mad. You're like, oh, now we got to back up Britain, the guys we just, you know, like we're literally one generation removed from when they all came over here.
The one we just escaped from.
Or you're going to sit there and piss off all the Germans now too. You're like, oh, and we got to go against the Germans. Going to make us fight our grandfathers. That's fucked up. So kind of a weird thing for World War I here. But around this time frame, those two immigrant blocks are huge in the United States. And what winds up happening is that the Irish sentiment, if you will, of having their own country, this appeals to everybody because if you don't like the Irish, what's going to get the Irish out of America faster than a free Ireland?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know? Whereas, like, you know, I just imagine if they were sitting there like, oh, we're going to fix Mexico so that Mexicans stay in Mexico. Mexico, by the way, a beautiful country with a lot of awesome parts to it. It's just that one section, the Juarez Valley, gets a little sketchy.
Yeah, so. And those same attitudes that they were facing back in Ireland, they're still facing that here in America too. That
there's, you know, plenty of Protestants here.
We talked about it in the previous episode, but you know, no Irish need apply. That help wanted, no Irish need apply. That that whole Anglo-Saxon attitude of, you know, the Irish really. The only problem with the Irish is that they're Irish. If you could, you know, wipe that clean, and it might be something. But they were definitely considered low class, ape-like. I mean, all the caricatures of it, that.
It's pretty funny,
time,
too.
Or, yeah.
Especially the Irish Catholics, right? Because then you had the Scots-Irish here that were...
Right. Well, they were a little more acceptable, but just marginally.
Most of the early presidents did have some Scotch-Irish ancestry. Right. So the reason why JFK is only considered the first Irish president, because you have to put emphasis on first Irish Catholic president.
Right.
What were you saying?
No, I was just going to say, too, that other very large immigrant bloc, the Germans, were predominantly Catholic, too. So you have a predominantly Protestant, Anglo-Saxon Protestant kind of an attitude here in this country. And now you have these two huge immigrant waves with the Irish and the Germans. And it's at the same time as that the Know-Nothing Party or the natives that you know – We're fine the way we are. We don't need any additional immigrants because they were overrunning the cities. There's no doubt that, and they're coming in, and then you have these absolutely poor, destitute immigrants that probably unskilled, you know, because they were working as tenant farmers back in the old country. That the only really skill that they had was working the land for somebody else,
right?
And beating up landlords.
And, yeah, beating up landlords. We'll get into that a little bit. But yeah.
Well, they're interesting too because now Currier and Ives, who immortalized Thomas Francis Maher during the Civil War, with that picture of him bravely leading a bayonet charge with his sword drawn on the horse. Kind of turned him into an American hero. Currier and Ives also prints out a Freedom to Ireland print, which is essentially a photo of Lady Liberty, okay, kind of that Columbia kind of a thing, her holding the flag of the Irish Brigade, the good old 69th, and holding her sword out as she marches towards presumably England, to England get out of Ireland kind of a thing. So very interesting heritage here with all that stuff.
Yeah, and part of that too is going back to the failed rebellion of 1848, they were starving, they were untrained, and they were basically going against the British Army with pitchforks and pikes, which was nothing more than a pruning hook.
Right, and British Army, best army in the world at this time. Yeah.
So they realized, you know, had we been fed, had we been better trained and better armed, better equipped, we might have had a shot at creating a rebellion that was successful, but that wasn't the case. So many of the Irish Americans and Irish immigrants, native-born Irish, We're now looking at the opportunity to join the Union Army as a training possibility. And if we can save the Republic, we can save the United States or the Union, maybe the Union is going to be a little more favorable to us going back to the other side now as trained veterans to win Ireland's independence. And
now, to be fair to the British Empire at this time, I want to be completely fair to them. I used to read this and get enraged, thinking, how could you do this to the Irish? This is human rights violations. This is absolute tyranny. This is disgusting. Then I dated a girl from Ireland for about 3 months one summer. And I completely understand the need to put these people to
Tell me more. Tell me more.
No, she was a good chick, man. Me and her are still friends. But it's I do like busting chops, all that stuff, man. Because the Irish are a little they're a little peculiar. Peculiar
was she,
people.
Was she a redhead?
No. No, it's not as much of a stereotype. There was plenty of stereotype there. But no, good chick. Still friends with her today. Very, very funny comic too, by the way. But the plan that started to come into effect here for the Fenians now. This is where it gets fascinating. You have the cause. You have the money because now their fundraising efforts are through the roof. People are donating weapons, ammunition. You're actually able to buy bonds, okay, from the Fenian Brotherhood that would be recognized 6 months after Ireland was independent. All right, so
right. You can cash those bonds in when Ireland is a nation once again, which is another – kind of a fight song.
And if they ever become one, those bonds still will be honored, as I understand, with accrued interest rates.
But Ireland belong a province, be a nation once again, and then you can cash in your bonds.
Oh, man. No, they're radical that way, man. But the Fenians have this plan. They now have soldierly experience, and a lot of their ranks are swelling. I mean, there's a shitload of them. They got conventions in Cincinnati, conventions out in Chicago. Anywhere you can have a bunch of patties together, they're willing to listen to this story, okay?
And pass the hat.
Yeah, it is. There's definitely a – it's like there's so many people. I'm just going to – I'm not picking on the kahuna here. But kahuna, you know about Notre Dame football, right?
Yeah.
All right, where's Notre Dame? But there's an idea that Notre Dame is a nationally followed team. So a lot of people don't know that they're from South Bend, Indiana, but it's a nationally followed team. So that's a big – every other school you're going to know where these people are from because you can't – you're eventually going to figure out that the Oklahoma Sooners are from Oklahoma.
Right.
But so there is this there's a lot of Irish people that take pride in Notre Dame despite never attending one semester or lecture over there. We're making fun of you, Joe Carney, all right? You're a plumber. Accept that. But the plan
just
that they've –
because you got some little Mick putting his fists up in the Notre Dame fight logo, right?
You guys should do that story, how they got the name the Fighting Irish at Notre Dame too. That's
– I'm not sure I'm fully into that story, that I'm aware of it, I should say.
So, I don't want to waste your time right now.
But, oh, no. We'll – God, he's the best guest. But the plan that they've now hatched is very simple here. This is where we're going to get into that weird robbing Peter to pay Paul kind of a thing. The Irish are going to raid Canada, take controls of sections of it by force, and then use the release of Canada as ransom for England to finally get out of Ireland. So picture Clooney, Matt Damon, Ocean's 11 kind of a thing walking in there, and they're all going to pull this great heist off in Canada. And
we're going to steal Canada.
Yeah, almost in a Trumpian kind of way. It's like, we're going to free Ireland and Canada is going to pay for it.
Yeah, you got to remember now too, Canada is still a British possession at
very
this
much
time.
So what a great trivia question we have at the very end here for the kahuna. We're going to fuck with them hard on this one.
They really thought that like the British were going to be like, oh, not Canada. Oh no, I'm miming tea.
Bloody hell, they got Canada.
And as Kevin Garifo, my friend, pointed out, this is before Bret the Hitman Hart was in Canada. So this was still we didn't know just how tough Canada was yet at this point. The Hart Foundation.
Where will we ever get our maple syrup from?
oh dear.
Tea time will never be the same again.
Right. So the plan is simple, right? That's on paper. That's the plan.
Yeah, that sounds like a winner.
So now O'Mahony leads this first raid into New Brunswick, April 1866, with a band of over 700 well-armed, largely U.S. Army-trained men. And the British military in Canada – they realize they need to respond very swiftly here. A large show of force for British warships coming in from Nova Scotia. They come right in there. As soon as these brave 700 men cross into Canada, right, they get over there. As soon as they're about to launch this attack, they see the British warships and they say, not today.
Yeah.
We'll get to it eventually.
So. It was one of those deals, too, that once again the Irish kind of tipped their hand, that everybody knew that this was coming and it wasn't any big secret. And you have all these rallies all across the United States raising money to arm these guys, and they're forming up the troops. They're sending them up to the border, and all of a sudden they're walking into or ferrying themselves across the river into Canada. The British knew they were coming. I mean, the Canadians knew that they were coming. And they like
to have a good time, the Irish. So I'm sure at a couple of saloons the night before, hey, what are we drinking for? Well, tomorrow we're invading Canada. I don't know if I was supposed to tell you that.
That's right. Yeah. I got to call out sick tomorrow at work, boss, because we're going over to Canada. Wait a minute. I wasn't supposed to tell you that.
Real quick. We're just going to go.
We'll be
back by lunch.
Yeah.
They did think that this was going to be a pretty quick operation.
Record Grey's Anatomy for me later.
So, like, just to be fair, then we're saying that throughout history, no one has ever taken Canada that seriously.
Also true.
Yeah,
it's Canada's fascinating too because it's sparsely populated. That even today, there's still big chunks of Canada nobody lives in, which gets kind of goofy. That's why you have the. Very sophisticated Toronto people. Then you have French Canada with Montreal and all their culture and everything. And then you have Newfies over in Trailer Park Boy territory. Mm. So a lot of interesting characters up there north of the border for us. But O'Mahony is in charge of these men that go into the New Brunswick area in April of 1866. And upon seeing the British warships, he goes, you know, I've always felt this draw to fundraising efforts back in Ireland.
That's right. I'm better at that than
so why don't I go?
Bullets.
I'm going to go back to Conciliation Hall, where I think they still have a tab open for me. And I'm going to go back over there, and we're going to drum up support for what you guys are going to do over here. All right. So
this was fun, guys. We stretched our legs.
That's right. Right.
You know.
Who doesn't love to travel?
We put the old gang together again.
Well, O'Mahony decides he's better suited for the fundraising efforts and leaves the military arm of the Fenian raids to the Irish-born but Union Civil War hero, Mr. John O'Neill. All right? Now, John O'Neill spells his last name O'Neill the way Paul O'Neill intended, you know, the great number 21. But over 1,000 Fenians under O'Neill crossed the Niagara River into Canada under the command of this man, John O'Neill now. They're aided in their effort to cross the Niagara River by Fenian sympathizers aboard the USS Michigan. That's a gunboat that was floating out there in the river that was supposed to be interfering with them. Now, what's hilarious is, you know who's president of the United States at this time, Kahuna? Think you're post-Civil War, so Lincoln has already went and saw a play he didn't quite like.
That's right.
Andrew Johnson was his VP. Andrew Johnson,
So a psychopath.
No, you're thinking Jackson.
Yeah, Jackson.
Oh, my bad, my bad.
Who's a very fun psychopath, though, if you were on his good side.
But, who was Scotch-Irish, by the way.
Right.
He was, true. Now, Andrew Johnson, considered one of the worst presidents of all time. But he was a little bit all over the place. But he was meeting with the members of the Fenian Brotherhood and was shaking their hands and, you know, hanging around and maybe having a couple pints. And
Answer for these who the president is at this time? Just my answer moving forward is just TR.
Like, well, TR does not come into this one.
I don't care. The answer is TR.
Well, now here, interestingly enough, so Johnson has largely supported what the Fenians are going to do. They all kind of know what's happening, like my dad was saying. And as they start to move on here, there's also a little bit of annoyance here, which my father just put a piece of paper in front of me, which I believe
that's the annoyance.
We're going to talk about we're going to talk a little bit about why the United States maybe wasn't in a hurry to defend British interests in Canada.
Yeah, Johnson and the rest of the U.S. government, you got all these Civil War veterans. A large part of them are of Irish heritage themselves. So there you have sympathetic feelings, if you will, towards this whole Fenian movement. Maybe they're not all about invading Canada, but, you know, they're not saying absolutely dead no either.
We're not really about it, but you know, yeah, right. if you twist the arm a little bit,
it might work. It might work.
Oh, you're mobilizing 1,000 men, like
right. You
know. Yeah, we could do it.
Oh, look over there. Look.
Imagine 1,000 Irish American people going up from New York up into Newfoundland. Like you don't notice.
You
that
got a convoy going up the New York Thruway, right? We're just here to go fishing or something.
You assume we could stay in the sun that long?
They were doing this in like June too. So.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
we lost troops along the way, mainly due to sunburn.
Well, you got to remember too, up in Canada, they probably just got rid of the snow by June too.
Oh, true.
Johnson and the rest of the administration were really still a little pissed off with England, too, because during the Civil War, England was a very strong, not an ally, but...
England was like...
a definite sympathetic ear to the whole Confederate cause because there was such
cotton trade and everything.
Yeah, there was such a strong tie-in with the South with the cotton and England with the mills that would turn that raw cotton into cloth, so that there was a lot of economic ties. And then it went as far as the English shipyards were building Confederate ships that were then sailing out of English harbors, going out onto the high seas and destroying, you know, Yankee merchant vessels, blockade running, because the Union during the Civil War created this blockade around all the major southern ports, trying to, you know, starve them out and keeping supplies and material from getting into the Confederacy.
One of the best ships, by the way, was the you want to say the name of the ship? The CSS?
Alabama.
Yeah. So the Alabama is being built up in England, which, by the way, pretty funny. One of the most industrial areas in Britain is Birmingham. So you have Birmingham, England, and then Birmingham, Alabama.
Wow.
So, yeah.
We'll tie in there, baby.
There was a lot of... English interests, if you will. And even earlier in the Civil War, England was trying to bring about or negotiate a peace between the North and the South because, you know, financially they were losing money by having the Southern goods from being blockaded from going to England. So they were losing money by having this war going on. So if they could negotiate a peace, things would go back to normal again.
Can I tell you, by the way, because sometimes the ships were named to have a ship named after you in naval heritage is like a huge compliment, a high honor. I think what we should do is we should have a ship named after one of the greatest NBA legends of all time, Magic Johnson. That could you imagine ISIS realizing that they've been pummeled into submission by the USS Magic Johnson? Imagine that, you know, showing up on their radar. They're just like, oh my God, the Magic Johnson's coming for us.
To be fair, though, KP, is that I think that ISIS doesn't operate in like a naval kind of
capacity. Yeah, they don't have too many ships with ISIS.
What's interesting, too, is that almost – that's the way that we bombard them now is that you have to go in. That's why the Dubai is like our number one most important ally over there because everybody has to come into the Persian Gulf in order to handle it. And by the way, those missiles, they made it very clear when I was on board the USS Kearney that our missiles on board the ship down in Jacksonville, Florida could pinpoint land and hit a right fielder in Wrigley Field in Chicago from Jacksonville. That's how far those missiles are able to travel.
Why do they want to blow up Wrigley Field, though?
They don't want to blow up the field. They just want to –
I'm actually in favor if they wanted to blow up Fenway. Sorry, Boston. No, what a gorgeous field that is. But
No, guys. It's really hard for me.
Do it. The gunboat in charge of intercepting the raiders, like we said, is the USS Michigan, who finally decides to start intercepting the reinforcements. A lot of crewmen on board the boat were Fenian Brotherhood members and or sympathizers who decided, hey, we're going to show up and break up this, you know, invasion party here. So you guys have, as far as I estimate, the next 14 hours to get done with whatever you're doing.
Right.
And then we're going to come
– then we're going to get serious.
Then we're going to come start cracking some skulls, baby. So it's very interesting, too, because I was saying, because the anti-Irish Americans thought that if the raids worked, all the Irish would leave their country, finally go back to Ireland. And the U.S. government was doing very little to stop the raids due to their annoyance, as my father said, with the British over the assistance to the Confederacy during the Civil War. Now, O'Neill and his men, this is the high water mark of the story. After this, it gets a little goofy. And we talked about...
Just a little goofy?
Quite.
Well, we talked about South Park
earlier. Quite goofy.
We talked about South Park earlier, Dennis and I, and there's actually a South Park reference to this episode, which I'm excited. Yeah, that's where Kahuna starts paying attention again.
Right now, you're talking his language.
O'Neill and his men lay a very careful ambush for the responding Canadian military. The Canadian forces were largely inexperienced outside of like drills and stuff like that. They literally were saying that these are kids from the University of Toronto that are getting pulled into the National Guard, saying like, "Hey,
militia."
Yeah, they've never seen combat before, and now you're going up against about 1,000 pissed off, well armed, recent battlefield experienced and battle hardened Civil War veterans of Irish descent who think they're fighting for their motherland, even though they're up in Canada.
Yeah, you know.
So now they lay this very careful trap for them, if you will, and this proves too much for the new Canadian forces here, and they lose what is known as the Battle of Ridgeway. Okay. So a 2-hour gunfight that culminated in a Fenian-led and ending in a Fenian-led bayonet charge defeats the Canadians. The losses are not severe, but there's a over – when we say casualty, by the way, people think death with casualty. Mm-hmm. Casualty just means that you're not returning to the battlefield really. So that could be an injury. They don't count illnesses as parts of casualties. But so if you got shot in the foot and you couldn't march the next day, you're considered a casualty. So,
yeah, if you're not answering the muster next morning.
Yeah, so there's only about 12 deaths in this battle, if you will, here, but over 100 casualties. So they're definitely the message is clear. The Fenians mean business, and they're doing pretty good right now. So between the Battle of Ridgeway and the successful street fighting in his attack on Fort Erie, which he winds up taking Fort Erie, O'Neill literally lives his dream of leading Irishmen into combat against British forces for the freedom of Ireland. All right, so he's it's not quite the same time zone he thought it was going to take place in.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe he's on a different continent about 3,000 miles away, but nonetheless, he's still living his dream.
He's still shooting
redcoats. Yeah. It's like – it's how I look at it this way. It's you want to sell out if Dennis is a musician and his dream is to play Asbury Park Convention Hall, you're not going to scoff at the idea that you still get to play a different convention hall. You know what I mean? So you're out in Chicago or something having a good time out there. Home of the blues. But
right. He's playing the Garden.
Yeah.
Just not Madison Square Garden.
Boston Garden.
I mean, it's the garden behind my fucking house, but it's the garden.
Honestly, this is a little off topic, but Convention Hall is the worst place to play. I've played there a couple times.
Damn.
And
really?
The acoustics are terrible because it's a convention hall. It's not supposed to be for
concerts.
Concerts. Yeah.
So everything just rattles around in there, and you're on stage, and it's literally like just all wash. So you have to blast your monitor. You're getting completely blown out. This isn't interesting anybody on this history podcast.
It makes me laugh too, man. Because what if we were to stage a resurrection of the Fenian raids? We're going to go march into Canada, and we're going to meet at the Asbury Park Convention Center, so that our voice sounds louder than it actually is.
I mean, you know.
Well, these Fenians mean business, Dennis. They're sitting here. They're making shit happen. By the way, weird footnote. Okay. O'Neill's victories over the Canadian forces, the British forces in Canada, if we're being more astute, those victories are the first Irish military victories over the British since 1745.
Yeah, we had a long drought. Had a long drought on that one.
Yeah, you're going through the
roughest of rough patches.
Yeah, the pre-Parcells Giants era, if I had to say anything about that. But no, fascinating things going on over here. Now, this catches the front page newspaper. This is – people are all about this, man. And the Fenian Brotherhood starts now swelling in popularity. And you got boatloads of paddies marching up to Buffalo to go try to join in the good fight here. And around this time frame, they have to enforce what's known as the neutrality laws. So Andrew Johnson, who had supported the Fenians fully, I mean, handshake agreements, meeting up with them, having a few pints every now and then like we talked about, now pulls his support and is forced to sever the resupply lines. So now these Fenians that are already in Canada can't get new supplies, and you're not allowing the Fenian reinforcements to cross into Canada. So now O'Neill is forced to retreat and releases the prisoners he kept from the Battle of Ridgeway and Fort Erie, shakes their hand, says, "All right, you guys are free now. Just kind of run on back your way." He goes, "But I'm coming back."
Yeah.
All right. So much like MacArthur in the Philippines,
I shall return,
vowing to return. O'Neill does return. He probably shouldn't have, though.
Yeah.
This is the, like we said, Dennis, that's the high water mark, man. You know, in comedy, they always say, Steve Martin, I think, said the Late Show Friday was the reason he quit comedy. And I can't tell you how whatever – usually it's a club that'll do it because most fundraisers or independent shows will do one show a night. But when you're there and it's a Late Show Friday or a Late Show Saturday and you just had one good show earlier in the day, so like the 7:30, everything was working, the crowd understood your jokes, they're good to go, and then it's about 10 o'clock and you see a bunch of drunks walking in. And you know, some couple that's pretty much finger banging underneath the front table, and you got to go up there and you know, entertain these shitheads after you just, you know, had a great show earlier, and you wish that was the last show and you could go out on that, but now you got to come back and do this bullshit.
You really love your career choice, don't you?
I do love it. That's the problem, but you know, it's I'm trying to draw the parallel here if I can for. If O'Neill had just not come back for the Late Show,
he wouldn't have seen those couple finger banging.
Pretty much, man. And by the way, here's the worst part. None of what I said is exaggerated.
Oh, God.
There is no hyperbole. I've seen a lot of weird shit. But what winds up happening is that after the Fenians have their support pulled, they're not able to resupply. O'Neill winds up having to go back into the United States. And it gets a little slap on the wrist. You know what I mean? Because you have President Andrew Johnson, he's not really going to enforce any of that. And then later, President, former head of the Army of the Potomac, you want to guess this President Kahuna?
Nope.
Ulysses S. Grant.
Okay.
Okay.
Very famous. Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Now, Ulysses S. Grant, interesting guy here. A little side note for you without just a fun fact. Ulysses S. Grant, his middle name is not S. Okay. His real name was Hiram Ulysses Grant. Okay. Mm-hmm. But when you went to West Point, they would take your initials of your first, middle, and last name and sew them onto your shoulder, if you will. So because his name was Hiram Ulysses Grant, Dennis got it a little bit quicker. He did not want to go to West Point Military Academy with the name
Hug
spelt out on his shoulder. So he changed his name. He changed his name to Ulysses Hiram Grant so that it would just say Ugh instead. Now, my favorite part of that story is because the U.S. military is so good at paperwork and such ardent record keepers, they fuck up and they call him Ulysses S. Grant, S literally standing for nothing. So the joke was Harry S. for nothing Truman, right, Dad? That's what Grammy used to call him?
Yeah.
Well, this is actually Ulysses S. truly for nothing Grant. Right. So they gave him a middle name he didn't have and they called him by his – so it was very funny stuff.
I thought you were going to tell me that he was so drunk when he told them what his middle initial was, he went Ulysses.
Anybody who doesn't know, Grant was a booze bag, man.
That's one opinion.
Let's be honest, man. All right.
I am.
Even his own friends don't defend him on this one. Tecumseh Sherman was even a booze bag too, though.
Well, that's another episode.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's those are other good names.
We'll get to the bottom of it.
Well, yeah. That being said, man, it is funny because they do play up his drunkenness in the South because they want to diminish Grant's greatness. But he was Patton before Patton. This is a blood and guts kind of a guy here. However, a little sympathetic. He goes, hey, you knucklehead Fenians, you better not invade Canada again, right? And almost like a little rascals kind of a thing. You know, O'Neill and the boys like, no, we're not going to go back. They went back.
Six times.
Six times.
Six
well,
times.
At a certain point, there's a punch card and a free sandwich involved.
But then the next one, oh, I don't want to jump your gun or
no,
anything.
No, keep going.
The next one, it's not even – at that point, Canada has decided to confederate and become Canada. So you're not even attacking Britain anymore. You're attacking Canada just for Canada's sake.
Right. Here's where it gets very fascinating because we're going to tie in the end here for that one because it's an awesome and hilarious point too. By the way. I said earlier we were talking about the episode of South Park. Here's where South Park is funny with what they did this episode. What actually happens might be funnier. O'Neill is the hero of the Fenian raid since he delivered its only victories. But upon his return to Canada, he met with harsher resistance from the Canadians and far less success. The raids were largely ineffective after the U.S. would intervene and again cut off the supply lines. Canada's better organized now. There's less intel coming back for him. O'Neill does succeed in capturing two Canadian buildings, though. captures them, occupies them. The Fenian raids are we're at it again. We now have something to possibly ransom off, or at least a base of operations to try to grow and resupply ourselves until they realize the buildings are firmly located within the United States.
Oops.
And they just invaded their own country.
Oops.
So
that boundary line is here somewhere.
Yeah. So imagine they were at a shared universe studio in Eatontown, New Jersey, and they had a Die Hard themed Christmas party here this year, which is very fun. Dennis, you should come next year. And Ming went all out with it. He called it Podcatomi Plaza. All right.
Oh, God.
And in the elevators, they put dummies with Santa hats on and holding a sign that said, ho, 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 now I have a podcast too. So imagine if the terrorists from Die Hard come in here and they try to invade Nakatomi Plaza, but they're actually on the fourth floor instead of the third floor. And they're like, aha, Ming, have your podcast studio now. And you're like, you guys are on the wrong floor. Well, it's the thought that counts. But yeah, largely ineffective here. This is spoofed, by the way, hilariously in one of my favorite episodes of South Park. In South Park, it was one of the early seasons too. Cartman joins the Confederate reenactors, right, for the Battle of South Park or whatever. And he bets Stan and Kyle that he can get the Red Badge of Gayness is the episode. I'd forgotten the name of it.
Glad it came back to you.
Yeah. So anyway, he bets Stan and Kyle that the Confederacy is going to win the reenactment this year, not knowing what a reenactment is. And they say, all right, cool, but you have to be our slave if that's the if you lose the bet. And so because he doesn't want to become Stan and Kyle's slave, Cartman gets the reenactors very drunk and says, hey, we should win this year. And the Confederates decide they're going to just win the battle. They then start invading Kansas and other parts of they move into Canada, right? And this is all based off the Fenian raids, where it's just a bunch of drunk dudes that are sitting there. They don't even know why they're fighting. Every time they start to say, hey, we should probably go home, Cartman gets a beer sponsor to show up and keep getting everybody hammered drunk. And the best part is at the very end of the episode, the Confederacy finally surrenders, right? And Stan and Kyle say, all right, so you have to be our slave now, right? And he goes, no, but that means the Union won, so slavery is abolished. So I don't have to be your slave. One of the brilliant episodes, man. But loosely based off these Fenian raids we're talking about here. Now, like we were talking about, O'Neill and many others were, quote, arrested for their involvement, but almost all of them were spared prison time with that little slap on the wrist from our boy Ulysses S. Grant. Most of these guys, by the way – yeah, it's a great picture too. it's Cartman as General Lee. I want to wrap up here because I want to talk about the last couple of things with these guys here. But I know we're missing some stuff because, LP, you got some weird-ass left turns to take.
Nah, not so much a left turn. It was just that the inspiration, if you will, or this whole Fenian movement – this was the Fenian movement in the United States. There was also a Fenian movement back home in the old country in Ireland, and there was many Republicans or people that were looking for Irish independence over there. One of the better known ones was this guy by the name of Jeremiah O'Donovan Rossa. He was a Fenian, started out as a Fenian leader, a prominent member of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, which then morphed itself later on into the what we've come to know as the IRA. This guy Jeremiah O'Donovan Rossa is probably best known, though, in his death with a graveside oration of Patrick Pearse. Now, Patrick Pearse was one of the guys who, as you alluded to earlier on in the beginning of the episode with the Easter Uprising in 1916, which eventually led to finally the Republic of Ireland. Or at least the 26 counties to the south. The six counties to the north are still under
26
rule.
Plus 6 equals 1.
this guy, Jeremiah O'Donovan Rossa, his parents were tenant farmers, poor tenant farmers. He becomes well-educated himself. His ancestors actually held letters of patent. In other words, they were prominent landowners, but all of their property was taken away from them by the British. So, he's growing up under a situation where he's feeling the wrath of the British government, if you will, as a child. He starts forming these various organizations like the Irish Republican Brotherhood. He's arrested in 1858. So we're right within that same time period. So what's going on in Ireland and what's going on in the United States, there's a lot of parallels. It's still the Fenian Brotherhood, if you will. He's arrested in 1858 and jailed without trial for a year. Later on, he's charged with plotting a Fenian rising in 1865. He's put on trial for high treason and sentenced to the penal servitude for life. In other words, he's one of those guys that's going to be transported anywhere out of Ireland or England. He's going to one of the British colonies to serve out his time in servitude. While he's in prison in 1869, he wins an election to the British House of Commons.
Yeah, this happens a couple of times, right? By the way.
So obviously the general population is with this guy. He wins an election to the British House of Commons in which he defeated the liberal Catholic Dennis Herron by a bunch of votes. But then the election was declared invalid because the guy's in prison. He's an imprisoned felon. Then he makes a promise that he's not going to return to Ireland and he's going to go off into exile and they're going to exile him to the United States. Well, he goes to the United States, takes up residency in New York City, where he joined Clan na Bhall, which is another Irish independence group. He's also involved with the Fenian Brotherhood in the United States. He organizes this campaign that called the Dynamite Campaign, where he's now taking the fight to England. So he's blowing up shit, but he's blowing up shit in England, not in Ireland.
It's a nice shock and awe vibe to that name.
So he's taken to the fight to the
like Donald Trump for president.
He eventually is shot in New York City by a British citizen. And they're claiming that, it was really an attempted assassination. Even his non-supporters are saying that, it's just way too many suspicions here with this woman who shoots him down. He doesn't die from that, but he does die later on, I believe, of what the heck was it? I don't know. Anyhow, he dies.
We can say tuberculosis.
Yeah, there we go.
I think it says it on the top of this back page.
Once he dies, notification is sent to the other side, and the Fenians in Ireland say, you got to send him back home that we can bury him at home, because this guy was such a noteworthy kind of a guy, making the headlines and everything else, that he's a noted leader of this whole Fenian Brotherhood. They send the body home. He's greeted with this hero's welcome kind of
rock star vibe.
Yeah, right. The whole the Irish Volunteers and the IRB, the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And then at his graveside, at his funeral, a guy by the name of Patrick Pearse, again, one of the leaders of the uprising that eventually led to Irish independence, gives one of his most famous speeches of Irish independence movement, stirring his audience to a call to arms. It ended with the lines, "They think they have pacified Ireland. They think that they have purchased half of us and intimidated the other half. They think they have foreseen everything, think that they have provided against everything. But the fools, the fools, the fools, they have left us our Fenian dead. And while Ireland holds these graves, Ireland unfree shall never be at peace." That became a rallying cry, a battle cry, if you will, that Ireland unfree shall never be at peace.
Hell of a battle cry.
So, yeah. So, that's taken by some.
Did you hear
to this very?
Oh, God, sorry. He's choked up. He's choked up.
Sorry.
Teary-eyed South Beach Larry.
Yeah,
oh, we got you.
Not teary-eyed. We didn't go that far.
Oh, we got him.
Oh, shit. I get choked up at the Star Spangled Banner. So
it's a good song.
Yeah.
One of my faves.
No, I love that, man. And it's Dennis, you made a good point. Did we leave anything else out? Because I know you did some research as well. I don't want to leave anything out that you put some time in on.
I'm going to consult my notes.
Yeah, flip through that while you can, because I'm going to wrap up a couple things on this one, because the Fenian raids blow my mind here. Irish history is nuts. I remember being a fan of American history, and then in fifth grade I had to do a country report, and I chose to do Ireland, and we'd always grown up listening to Irish folk music in the house and everything. And so it was for fifth grade's country report. I'm researching the history of Ireland, and I'm blown away by it, because in American history, we tell the story of, and then we kicked their ass, and then we kicked these guys' ass, then we kicked a little more ass, then we invented a bunch of cool shit and kicked some more ass. World War One, we solved that. So there's always like – it's such great history, you know, from the G.I. Joe-loving time frame that I was growing up in, and then you hear Irish history and like, we tried – didn't go so good, so we tried again a little later. Didn't go so good, so we tried one more time. Then we were quiet for a little while, but then somebody wrote something pretty good and we had to get back involved again. So, but all these things wind up taking on you build off everything. So everybody borrows from everybody else's rebellion. You build up into this great giant thing here. Now, O'Neill is a fascinating guy because he never really sees any jail time for literally invading another country with a foreign army on foreign soil. Dies of a stroke in Nebraska in 1878. A county seat is named in his honor. Okay. O'Mahony would die in New York City in 1877. His remains were taken to Ireland, where he received a full public funeral. And the Fenian raids are very fascinating to me because in classic Irish fashion the Fenians sought to free a nation of British rule. In a weird way, they did, just not the one they intended, Kahuna. As Dennis alluded to earlier, the Canadian Confederation of 1867 recognized Canada as its own country, independent from England. So the Irish invasion freed Canada from British rule. If you're confused, it means I told the story right.
So the last thing that I found in here was that – so we're talking about a period from 1866 to like 1871 where they were doing like most of the raids and stuff. And first off, it's so funny to me that every couple of years they're just like, remember that time that we like went to Canada? Right. You shouldn't do that
anymore. Road trip.
By the end of it, when they do that whole mess with the mistaken borderline, they have like 35 guys and they're supposed to meet up with a reinforcement troop of like French and Indians, and like the French and Indian guys have already signed a treaty with the British, so they just capture them and turn them over to the Americans. And then the last thing that I got from it was that they kept the Fenian Brotherhood going until like they lost a lot of support in, like, by the 1880s, 1890s. But they moved their basis of operations out to the Pacific Northwest and just were talking about attacking British Columbia because – and I think it's – well, it's still called British.
So like, right.
We're kind of on brand.
Right.
Yeah. Oh,
that's a great point too, because you know, you're thinking that Johnson was kind of turning a blind eye to all of this kind of stuff. At the same time, there was a big argument between – United States and Britain, where exactly is the boundary line for Washington and Oregon and all that kind of stuff?
Territories,
right?
Yep.
That there was a conflict as to who actually owns this place.
Well, we're confusing too because we own Alaska, which is the tip of the iceberg up there, if you will, pun intended.
Very appropriate.
But it's a wild situation with that. And then there's those that if you talk to, because I remember we talked about the end of the Civil War. That if you go by the northern definition, it ended at Appomattox Courthouse with the surrender of Robert E. Lee to Ulysses S. Grant in the end of the Army of Virginia, or Northern Virginia, I should say. But if you talk to the people down in the Deep South, they say the Civil War is still going on. Well, there's certain people over in Ireland that are saying, okay, yeah, well, Ireland's free except for the northern six counties, and there's still some shit going on over there, man. Now, they mostly came to the table over there, so it's not quite as violent as it used to be, but still a fascinating island. And if there's anyone from Ireland listening to this show, please leave me a review on iTunes. That's all I ask. All right? We're no longer trending in the Russian Federation. So, as I used to say, Nostrovia, to our Russian listeners, I'm very sorry the KGB is not listening to this show anymore. But that being said, man, I want to say thank you to my guest, Dennis Daly, coming on here, brother. Where can they find? What's the band name? What can we do to support you on social media?
Shady Street Show Band. You can find me at D-Train Daly. I cook a lot. I post hype videos on Instagram. I'm going to make one with these guys, like, right before we leave.
Are you single right now or no?
Yeah. You can find me on Tinder. On
Grindr.
I'm staying off of Grindr for now, but you know, it's a desperate time.
So. At least until it's warmer out. I got to. This episode is near and dear to my heart, man. So I'm very happy Dennis came in. Please get back into comedy, but we need more people like you and less people like John Sweeney. He won't listen. I got to say thank you to Mike and Ming over at a Shared Universe taking great care of us. I want to say thank you to the Kahuna behind the ones and twos. You did a double duty today, man. We're trying to get as many episodes in with old South Beach Larry before he abandons us again for Miami.
getting a little warmer here, but not quite what we're
it's
having down
it's, south. It's nice sweater weather.
When we're back to your standards, we'll see you soon.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the truth, man. But now, Dad, you raised us all the car rides with the Irish music, the pride and the heritage, everything like that. This all and the love of history. It all comes from you, man. So I love you. Thanks for letting us do this episode we're with you. Now I'm getting weepy-eyed. Oh, boy. Yeah. I love my dad. I'm sorry, guys. But yeah, man, this was a great episode. If you guys like the show, please help us out. You can check me out at KP Burke Sucks on Twitter and Instagram, KP Burke on Facebook. Got a couple dates I got to plug coming up here. I found out if you plug dates at the end of a podcast, you can write it off as promotion on your taxes.
Oh.
I don't know if you guys knew that. So if you're interested, this episode's going to be coming out. What are we putting this one out, Kahuna? This one's going to come out Tuesday the 26th, which means that if you want to come out on the 30th, down at Uncle Vinny's, you can come see me open for Mr. Pete Dominic. Going to be a good time where he's a very funny dude. And then I'm very excited. The first week of April, you can see me at my buddy Anthony Cianci's house. I'm going to be going over there. I'm messing around. I'm going to be with Steve Hofstetter at Uncle Vinny's on April 5th. I got some local gig. Anyway, let's get to the real fucking meat of the bones here, man. I'm very excited. On April 19th and 20th, I'm going to be featuring for my friend Lynn Coplitz at Gotham Comedy Club, all four shows the entire weekend. That's the 19th and the 20th. Please come out for that. On the 25th, opening for my friend Lynn Coplitz again at Del Lago Casino. All right. And then the 26th and the 27th, if you guys like gambling and you're going to be up at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, come on by. I'm going to be opening up all four shows Friday and Saturday for the legendary Bobby Kelly. So please, another proud Irishman. So if you want to come check me out at any of those shows, guys, please do that. Check us out. Support the show. Leave us a review. Guys, that was the Fenian Raids. American Losers. Thank you.
An American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born.